Welcome to Menachem Begin, His Life, Legacy, and Uniquely Jewish Statesmanship, a limited series podcast brought to you by Tikva and MeirSoloveitchik.com. This special series is sponsored by the Hart N. and Simona Haston Family Foundation in partnership with the Menachem Begin Heritage Center in Jerusalem. The episodes in this study of Prime Minister Begin's remarkable leadership are drawn from Rabbi Soloveitchik's comprehensive, year-long podcast on the history of the most interesting city in the world, Jerusalem 365. Jerusalem 365 is available at MeirSoloveitchik.com. And now, on to Begin. This is episode number 7, Begin and Sadat, The Beginning.
When Anwar Sadat rose to power in Egypt following the death of Nasser, he was originally seen, as I have mentioned in the name of Yehuda Avner, as a weak substitute for the once mighty and demagogic leader that he replaced, and it was assumed by many that his presidency would have no lasting effect. Yehuda Avner's point, of course, was that Sadat was completely misunderstood. Meanwhile, Menachem Begin served as the leader of the opposition over decades and lost election after election, so much so that his ultimate victory was a shock to many in Israel. And even then, Begin's opponents did not realize the enormous impact his victory and premiership would have for his country. Following the warm connection that was created between the two leaders, between Begin and Sadat, there were those that still dismissed Begin as lacking flexibility and as not really being a man of peace. When Begin departed to Oslo to receive the Nobel Peace Prize with Sadat, Golda Meir said something to the effect that, in her view, Begin deserved an Oscar, not a Nobel, as if Begin wasn't truly sincere, as if Sadat and not Begin truly sought an end to war. But of course, this interpretation of Begin was entirely wrong. To see Begin in this way is to fundamentally misunderstand him. Begin, the man that sought and fought to expel the British from the land of Israel, was the very same man that made peace with Sadat, and the warmth that developed between him and Sadat was very genuine. And if one looks back to 1975, 2 years before Begin assuming the premiership, one will find the future leader of the Jewish state already opening himself up to the possibility of sacrifices for the sake of peace. As we mentioned yesterday, the original attempts by the Ford administration to broker an agreement between Egypt and Israel in 1975 broke down over precise terminology. Let us cite again the summary of the issues at hand, given to us by Lazar Berman and Uri Sadot in commentary. Quote, Kissinger conveyed President Sadat's demand to Israel that the Jewish state withdraw from the critical Gidi and Mitla passes and the Hashiba alert station overlooking them in the Sinai. Rabin was willing to withdraw from significant portions of the Sinai won in 1967 and defended in 1973 in return for a non-belligerency agreement. But Sadat was willing to offer only quote-unquote non-use of force, not a peace treaty. And Rabin was not about to give up the strategic passes for such a tepid guarantee, end quote. Rabin's insistence on this matter, as we discussed, was followed by a cold letter from Ford, and after that, a letter to Ford from Congress strongly supporting Israel's position. Ultimately, an agreement between Egypt and Israel was created, involving the presence of non-Egyptians in the sites from which Israel would withdraw. What follows is a summary of the pact given to us by the Jewish Virtual Library, quote, The agreement provided for a limited forces zone, a UN-supervised buffer zone, an Israeli and an Egyptian electronic surveillance station, and an additional station to be manned by 200 American civilian technicians as part of an early warning system. Egypt also regained access to the Abu Rudeis oil fields, end quote. In Henry Kissinger's interpretation of what is called the Sinai II agreement, there was real substance to the pact, reflecting the possibility of peace between Egypt and Israel. Quote, Both sides declared that, on defined issues, force would not be used. Israel gave up the passes. Egypt renounced the use of force against Israel in a range of circumstances, even pledging not to support Syria in another attack on Israel. These measures would define Israel's and Egypt's entire perceptions of one another. Sadat and Rabin, Kissinger continues, were reaching for a comprehensive solution, not for the entire region, but in essence with each other. End quote. Of course, when the next major step in Israeli-Egypt relations was taken, it would not be Rabin that would be representing Israel, for the Labor Party would not be in power much longer. And even then, in 1975, one can see the beginnings of the approach that Begin would take as prime minister. But before we turn to Begin, we may permit ourselves one humorous interlude about the events surrounding the Sinai II agreement, one involving a notation given to us by Yehuda Avner. Yehuda Avner wrote in The Prime Ministers, quote, "Needless to say, President Ford was delighted at the successful outcome of his and Kissinger's efforts, and on the day of the signing, 1 September 1975, he telephoned Rabin in Jerusalem to express his congratulations. Tasked with transcribing the exchange, I hardly recorded a word of it because it turned out to be a four-minute swap of unexceptional platitudes." Not so, continued Yehuda Avner, in the case of the call the president made to Anwar Sadat in Alexandria on the same day. "There are times when heads of states stumble into the theater of the absurd," end quote. And Yehuda Avner goes on to give us the transcript of the exchange, which includes passages such as this. President Ford, "Hello, President Sadat?" President Sadat, "Hello, this is President Sadat." President Ford, "How are you this morning? I wanted to call you and congratulate you on the great role that you played in the negotiations that have culminated in this agreement." President Sadat, "Hello?" Inaudible. President Ford, "Unfortunately, I don't hear you too well, Mr. President. I hope that my conversation is coming through more clearly. Let me express most emphatically on behalf of my government the appreciation for your statesmanship, despite adversity and some criticism, the spirit in which you have approached the need for an agreement. I am most grateful for the leadership that you have given and look forward to continuing the work with you." End quote. And then at one point in the transcript, we have Sadat again saying, "Hello?" With Ford saying, "I am asking, can you hear me, Mr. President?" And Sadat responding, "This is President Sadat." And the call went on in this way for some time.
The Menachem Begin Heritage Center is the national commemoration project honoring and preserving the legacy of Israel's sixth prime minister. The Begin Center houses a library, archives, research center, educational department, and a full museum. Its mission is to pass on to the next generation the principles of Menachem Begin's values-driven leadership and to provide a space to explore what that means in today's complicated world. Visit the Begin Center in the heart of Jerusalem to experience the life and times of Menachem Begin.
But there was another event in 1975, largely overlooked then as now, but highlighted by Avi Shilon in his biography of Menachem Begin, an event that in retrospect truly set the stage for the peace that was yet to come. In 1975, Menachem Begin held the conference of his own political party, Chirut, in Kiryat Arba, the area of Hebron, in order to emphasize the historic connectedness of Judea and Samaria to the Jewish people. As Avi Shilon points out, at the time, the focus by journalists on this conference was only on Begin's position regarding Judea and Samaria. But the reporters did not notice another fascinating fact, that the leader of the Israeli right explicitly emphasized his willingness to utilize captured territory in the Sinai as an object of negotiations in a peace agreement with Egypt, precisely because that area did not have the same sacred significance as Judea and Samaria. Avi Shilon explains what the reporters missed when they saw nothing new in Begin's remarks. Quote, "But this conclusion was a large miscalculation, since at the conference Begin revealed a big surprise, his position regarding withdrawal from Sinai. Not many people noticed that in the conference's closing statement, Begin made an important distinction between the Sinai Peninsula and the lands of the homeland, the status of which he declared would, quote-unquote, never be negotiated. Thus," Shilon continues, "he expressed for the first time that he officially endorsed a compromise regarding Sinai," end quote. So Shilon writes, and he further notes that after these remarks, Begin was approached by his political ally, Shmuel Katz, with Katz expressing his disagreement with Begin, saying to Begin, quote, "Sinai is today's iron wall, and it is most dreadful that the conference did not include it in our national demands," end quote. Here, Katz was referring to the famous 1923 essay by the founder of their political movement, Zev Jabotinsky, about the need of those bringing the Jewish state into being to defend themselves from those that sought to destroy it. And Katz was suggesting, apparently, that Begin was somehow not ewing to the principles of their party. But Begin, as Shilon reflects, saw things differently. In his view, an agreement regarding the Sinai remained a possible source of producing peace while protecting the Jewish presence in the Holy Land. Or as Shilon describes Begin's approach, quote, "His worldview was derived from the belief that God had promised the land of Israel to the people of Israel, and Sinai was not part of the promised land," end quote. Shmuel Katz's view would continue to exist in parts of Begin's circle, and Begin taking his own approach highlights who he was, a man with strong principles along with a willingness to make certain sacrifices and take certain chances for peace. This would be revealed later in the 70s, but the source of this approach by Begin is first found in 1975. Some years after 75, in response to critics of his making peace with Sadat, Begin explained that he, Begin, the man that had fought for his people, was the very same man that would work hard to make peace for his people. Begin put it this way, in Hebrew. Kein, yesh kshayim bashalom, yesh machovim bashalom, yesh korbanot leman hashalom, yesh. Yes, there are difficulties in peace. There are. There are wounds in peace. There are. There are sacrifices for the sake of peace. There are. Kulam adifim mi korbanot hamilchama. They are all better than the sacrifices of war. Et zot ani machriz. It is this that I proclaim. Mi she'amad b'rosho shel irgun lochem. Ani asaper l'kneset al machshava pshuta ma'od. The one that stood at the head of the fighting irgun. I will tell the Knesset about a very simple thought. And then Begin went on to add his thoughts on the matter, describing a moment when he had sustained an injury. Shavarti regel, I broke a foot. Uve'achad hayamim v'halilot, ineni yodea, altali machshava kazu. And on one of the days and nights, I don't know, it occurred to me the following thought. Oya, im tifrot milchama, ulai asarot, ulai meot, tzirim shalanu, yishkavu b'midha. Oya, if war breaks out, perhaps 10, perhaps hundreds of our young people will lie in bed, im regel shfura, with a broken foot. O beli regel chalila, or, God forbid, without a foot. And then Begin ended. Tzarich limnoa milchama. One must prevent war. In 1975, we first find the source of what would ultimately become a remarkable agreement and a remarkable act of peacemaking between two leaders. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.